My name is Anthony, and you are listening to Gangland Wire, the best mafia and true crime podcast on the internet today.
So when they take the silver dollar, they got to go around different banks.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire. Creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
I said it a little quicker this time, didn't I, Aaron? I almost fooled him. You were here in the Classic Ice House in Midtown Kansas City, and kind of a sultry, humid day. Hopefully, when we get this posted, it won't be quite so sultry and quite so humid. We are doing, as you know by now, we are doing a multi-episode series on the mob, or rather, I should say, the media and the mob. And what I wanted to do was interview reporters and anybody in the industry that reports on the mob, maybe writes books about the mob, but is not law enforcement and is not a former criminal. You know, one of our buddies like Frank Culotta and Red Womack. Of course, Red, maybe, I wouldn't call Red a criminal, but but he was in the life, shall we say. And so, but these guys, these are the unsung heroes of the Fourth Estate. And I know they catch a lot of flack nowadays, you know, hashtag fake news and all that. I don't really delve into those kinds of things because I have had really good relationships with mob reporters. And that's what I would call these guys is mob reporters. They have sources. They have sources in the police department. They have sources in the crime families. They have sources who are just businessmen who might not want to talk to the police. So they've got sources all over the place, and they expose the mob. The only way a mob can be successful, organized crime can be successful, is to stay below the radar, to not alert the general population as to exactly what they're doing. Because once the general population gets alerted to what they're doing, then pretty soon they're looking at their elected representatives, who many times the mob has been paying off on an occasion or two, and they'll say, you know, you need to do something. They'll look at their police departments and say, you know, you guys need to get off your butts and go do something. Or they'll look at the FBI. Maybe their neighbor's an FBI agent, or they'll write their congressman or something and say, you know, I just read in the Kansas City Star or the Las Vegas Sun-Times that these guys are, you know, skimming money from casinos, or these guys are running illegal gambling, and you know, what is anybody doing about it? So these guys are an equal and equally important part of the war on organized crime and the war against corruption. And because if you allow them to continue their corrupt ways, you know, pretty soon they're running everything and doing exactly what they want. So. Tonight, we have my good friend and former Las Vegas reporter, Larry Henry. It's good to have you on here, Larry. How you doing?
Great to be here, Gary. Thanks a lot for having me on, Gary and Aaron. I really appreciate it.
You know, folks, Larry Henry was, due to the power of social media, we became friends several years ago. He got onto my movie Gangland Wire real early because he had an interest in Las Vegas and the skimming trials, because he was a newspaper reporter at that time. And I noticed that he would like my posts when I'd put them up, and he'd repost them. And pretty soon we started corresponding a little bit, and he's moved back here to the Midwest in a city not, you know, a driving distance of Kansas City. And so we had talked out, we'd have to get together and at least share an adult beverage or a Coke or something and a cup of coffee. And finally I got down to see him here recently, and we had a nice long conversation, about all this stuff. And since then, I had this idea about the mob and the media to really focus on newspaper reporters. And Larry, of course, you're the first one I thought of. You were right in the thick of it out there, weren't you? Tell folks a little bit about your history on how you got into this business.
Yeah, Gary, I was at Tulsa, at the Tulsa World, and then went out to Nevada. From there to the Reno Gazette Journal, and started out, I was a political reporter. This was in the early to mid 80s, right when all this stuff was popping, Gary, that we're talking about, that we're, you and I both write about. It was a great time. It was, you don't really, and you and I have talked about this, Gary, when you were a cop in Kansas City and one of the guys staking out the Tuffy DeLunas and Nick Savellas of the world, when you're right in the middle of that kind of stuff, years later, you really reflect on it and understand what an important time it was. But I was out in Reno and then ultimately went down to Las Vegas and was political editor at the Las Vegas Sun while all this was going on. And, you know, amidst reporters, I really cut my teeth around the best in the business. At that time, I didn't really think of it that way. I thought it was just a bunch of hard-hitting, reporters who dug and dug and dug and were like pit bulls and never gave up. And looking back on it now, Gary, all these years later, I couldn't have been in a better place as a young reporter than in Nevada during that era. That was right at the tail end of the Spilotro and Rosenthal years, and when, you know, the mob was completely and fully infiltrated into the casino industry. And then I got out briefly out of the newspaper business out in Nevada and went to work. One day I got a call from the prosecutor down in Las Vegas, a guy named Bob Miller, whose dad had been one of the pioneers of gaming, and as they call gambling out in Las Vegas. He was one of the gaming pioneers out of the Riviera and elsewhere in Nevada. And he called and said, I want to have breakfast with you. So we met at the Pepper Mill in Reno. I was still at the Reno newspaper. I thought he wanted to give me a story. You know, it's like you said, Gary, at the top of the show, it's all about source development and getting to know prosecutors. And I still, to this day, I tell young reporters, if you know cops and prosecutors, you're going to get a lot of great stories. So went and met him at the Pepper Mill coffee shop in Reno. And he said, do you want to come to work for me? I'm going to run for lieutenant governor, because the governor at that time, Richard Bryan, was contemplating running for the Senate. So, you know, I was a young guy, took the job and went to work for Miller, learned a lot, then got back in the media and ended up ultimately down in Las Vegas at the Las Vegas Sun. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, Gary, but I really learned from a lot. I know we're going to talk about some of the legends of Las Vegas and Nevada media like Ned Day, but that was, you know, and to this day, a lot of those folks are real good friends of mine, and it's just, it was a great, exciting place to be as a young reporter. There's no question about it.
Great. Larry, I'm going to play a little tape here. Let's listen to this. It's a real deal tape, so it's a little bit hard to listen to, folks. So just relax and maybe replay it a time or two. Just pull your slider back and replay it. This is Nick Savella, the boss of Kansas City, and his underboss, Tuffy DeLuna, talking with Joe Augusto in a home here in Kansas City. And they're talking about the press coverage of Lefty Rosenthal at the gaming control hearings. And that's a pretty famous conflict that everybody knows from watching, if you watch the movie Casino, when Lefty Rosenthal is in front of the gaming commission and he ends up in the argument, so to speak, with the chairman of the Gaming Control Board. Who played that part, Larry? Was that Tommy Smothers? It was Tommy Smothers, wasn't it? And that was the real life Harry Reid, who went on to be the well-known Senator Harry Reid, who we did a show on with Bill Owsley not too long ago. But so just listen to this tape a little bit.
Well, this is the Valley Times here. You know, I brought you an editorial, see? They wrote an editorial about a Lefty. Uh-huh. And I just delivered it.
You brought it
and told him to leave town.
Yeah, he read it to me while we drive.
Who did? The editorial.
Well, what paper?
The New Journal.
Is that the that he leave town?
Yeah.
Frank Rosenthal saga must come to an end. It's time we put the Rosenthal saga at an end. They went back to him, applied for license before, yeah. And I was fighting at that time for the fishing. About 2 years later, we were doing the same thing.
Well, the Review Journal is a dirty son of a bitch. They were for List all along, and I guess.
It's a pretty good-sized article.
Joe, did you got the same Wall Street Journal I got?
Yeah. Well, then, two of them.
That's pretty interesting, Larry. Did you realize how closely these guys, how much attention they were paying to their press coverage? Do you have any idea Joe Augusto would gather up the newspapers? And actually, there's other tapes where he was sending them back on an airplane to Kansas City, and so they were following your press coverage really closely during that time. Worried about, well, he said, well, how is it Gus Greenbaum? He wanted to know how Greenbaum was handling it. They were really concerned about him.
Hank,
say that again.
Yeah. Hank Greenspun.
Hank Greenspun. I'm sorry.
Las Vegas Sun. Yeah.
Yeah. They were really kind of, how's Hank Greenspun handling it? And then they were talking about the Review Journal, and Nick Savella said something about, yeah, well, they were for List all along, weren't they? Because they, you know, Bob List was running for governor at the time, and he was kind of a mob buster. He was going after Lefty Rosenthal, and then that final sentence where on a national level, where Nick says, see, somebody, one of them reads the newspapers and said, Joy is Iupa and Spilotro are moving west. The outfit's moving west to Las Vegas. And Nick Savella just says, oh, boy. And he did not like that getting reported. So you probably, at the time, you never thought about them following you guys so close, did you?
Well, it was funny, Gary, because I was more of a political reporter. I ended up being political editor for a few years at the Las Vegas Sun. But, you know, the Mob Museum in the spring did a really great panel. Jeff Schumacher, who was the city editor at the Las Vegas Sun when I was the political editor, real good friend of mine, who now is at the Mob Museum and is the director of their content. He was talking about to George Knapp, who's another one of those legendary Las Vegas reporters who is still at KLAS, the CBS affiliate in Las Vegas. They were talking about how every day, Gary, there was just a big mob story. It was a constant thing. There were always, you know, indictments coming down. There were always, everybody was covering every aspect of it. You had, Lefty Rosenthal's car blowing up. You had just all kind of crazy stuff going on. But, you know, it's really funny. You never really know how closely people like that are following what the media. When I read your book, Gary, Leaving Vegas, which is fantastic, that's where I first saw the transcript where Savella is talking about. I didn't realize until I read your book recently how closely Savella, Nick Savella, the Kansas City crime boss that you used to trail, I didn't realize how closely he followed the news account. And if, unless I'm mistaken, Gary, I think Savella subscribed to the Las Vegas Sun and had it. Obviously, this was pre internet days where you couldn't call it up online, but it really was interesting to me how closely they followed it. And then, of course, Rosenthal going off on Harry Reid and scaring all those Midwestern mobsters about the attention he was getting and making them all nervous because of the media attention, you know, because of people like my friend Jeff Gehrman, by the way, reporter at the Sun, a friend of mine who worked with me at the Sun, who now is at the Review Journal covering court, still breaking big stories. That's the thing that's beautiful about a lot of this, Gary. A lot of those people, there's that generation of reporters who are still working in Las Vegas, who are the last link to those days and actually covered it back in the 70s and 80s and covered Spilotro and covered Rosenthal. Jane Ann Morris and Mike, you mentioned Michael Green, who worked at the Valley Times, Linda Fass, who was a city editor out there. So, and is still working in the advertising business. So yeah, it was, I did not know. I'm not sure you ever know how closely people are following what's happening in the media, at that time, but man, they sure were. And your book does a fantastic job of pointing out the how closely those guys back here were following that stuff.
I was kind of shocked when I first got those tapes to listen to that. And you know, out there in Las Vegas, you had in particular, you had Ned Day, who was, he was a go-getter. And, you know, before we get, we're going to talk about Ned Day, but before we get into that, tell me just a little bit about your own kind of personal how did you deal with this? That you followed politics, and of course, if you're going to have an organized crime family, they're going to be constantly trying to get into politics. How did you, you know, what kind of sources did you develop?
Nothing is as valuable as sources, and we'll talk about Ned Day in a way. Even the way source development, Gary, I know you mentioned it earlier, the way it's changed over the years in newsrooms. There was, you know, working sources in bars and restaurants, and it was an endless cycle that, you know, I'm not sure is as close as it was. But with the internet, sort of a second aspect of that, Gary, with the internet, record, you know, digging out records has become more accessible. But back then, you know, sources would get you records, they would get you documents, they would leak you important papers that weren't online, if that makes sense, Gary. So that became a big leg up that you had on a lot of competitors. If you had those sources who could get you those kind of documents that became significant, you know, court documents and things like that, which were accessible then too. I don't mean to imply that they weren't, but so yeah, source development sort of set the reporters apart. And I learned a lot of that too, just watching friends of mine like Jeff Garriman. I mentioned Jeff a second ago, who was a colleague of mine at the Las Vegas Sun, just that incessant digging. I mean, I just think the best reporters are the ones who dig and dig and work sources, and sources know they can trust them. It's, you know, you'll have sources who are cops, prosecutors, judges, but, you know, candidly, you'll have sources, you know, in the underworld too. I mean, and they're often the best sources, the people on the other side. I've throughout my career, the best scoops I've gotten have been from people on the dark side. True. You know what I mean, Gary? So It's all about just having a broad field of sources, no question about it.
Did it help, Larry? Did you ever just by chance happen to have a lunch at the Upper Crust?
Aaron, I didn't. It's funny because not long ago, I've got, you know, my YouTube channel. I'll pop up some video. You know, when I have some fun with just my iPhone, I'll go out and shoot videos of. One of the things I think that makes all this mob stuff interesting is a lot of these sites still exist, you know, so you could go. So when I go back to Las Vegas from time to time, I'll swing by and see what's going on at some of these places. So I popped up a couple of years ago. I shot some video of that site on Maryland Parkway out near UNLV. I know you guys know where it is, where the Upper Crust was. And then the bar next to it that Spilatro had, Frank Colato, Tony Splotch, all those guys, the Upper Crust and the bar, which now are different businesses, but those locations are still there. Now, I just learned from a friend of mine that the bank where the FBI used to set up in that same parking lot to take those great surveillance pictures that to this day are just fantastic photos of Colato and Spilatro and DeVino and those guys hanging out outside the Upper Crust. That bank building, as I understand it, I'm going out there next month. I've got to take a look at it. My understanding is that bank building that provided all those outstanding surveillance photos is now rubble. So no, I never did have pizza at the Upper Crust, so I kind of regret that. It would have been fun.
Now, I mean, when we talk about your work in the 80s, doing the kind of coverage that you do as a political editor, how would you go about you were in charge of other people that were doing the reporting, and you'd say work on this story or that story, and they would bring stuff back to you, whether, you know, what, raw or whole, as a whole story. How would you, you know, in the era now of fake news, how could you fact check your own reporter's work to go, yeah, that really seems accurate, especially in the realm of, you know, if you're talking about the mob and the politician?
Well, a lot of that, again, is records-based reporting. You know, again, I go back to somebody I work closely with, Jeff Garriman at the Las Vegas Sun. You know, you know the sources. You develop a rapport, and I'm thinking, too, of the Deep Throat situation at Watergate. You don't press on sources with reliable reporters that you know about, but there comes a time when you have a candid conversation with the reporters that you send on big stories where that kind of information does become pertinent. But it just becomes a situation of, you know, the reporters who have the outstanding sources and are really good diggers, and, you know, you work with them on every line of the story. Accuracy, obviously, fairness, absolutely crucial, but it just becomes a situation of relying on the reporters that have a track record and relying on the records they dig out and the sources they have. You know, a lot of the stuff that we did was, you know, you try as much as possible to have attributed stuff. You don't want to use unattributed stuff, but we just had some outstanding reporters who had great sources. And, you know, it was kind of a different era then, too. Like I say, guys, it was those reporters in Las Vegas, whether it was Ned Day or Knapp at Channel 8 in Las Vegas, or the Sun or the RJ, Jane Morris and people like that. It was just really solid reporting, which to this day holds up. I'm thinking of the documentary that Ned Day did, which I think ended up being the Muckraker, who started out the Valley Times small newspaper, went to the RJ, the Big Daily, and then went to Channel 8. He did a fantastic documentary in 1987. This obviously is pre-internet, all that stuff, which to this day stands the test of time because how good it was and how accurate it was because of his sourcing, Aaron. I mean, he got things right. His sources respected that he got things right. And Gary, you know, this as a cop, you know, you talk to reporters off the record, and you know, if they don't burn you and they get it right, they'll come back to you with information, Aaron, that then will give you further scoops because they know they can trust you.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now tell me the truth. Did you ever get anything from Kent Clifford?
No, but you got the best Kent Clifford clip I've ever seen, Gary, on your documentary. Tell that story. He told the story,
didn't he? A lot of people know this. You know, Kent Clifford was the commander of the Las Vegas Metro Intelligence Unit, and there was word out there was a shooting. We won't go into this. It was in casino. The couple of his intelligence guys shot and killed one of Spilatro's guys, and the word was out that there was a contract out on these two policemen. So Kent Clifford, Commander Clifford, flew back to Chicago, went to some mob guy's house up on the north side, probably a Cardo's house or somebody like that, and Iupa's, and knocked on the door. No, they weren't home, but he told somebody there that, you know, you tell them that if any of my men are hurt, I'm going to come back here with 40 men and kill everybody around here. So then he went down, I think it might have been Alan Dorfman that he went to next, or a lawyer, I believe it was Dorfman, and told him the same thing. And then supposedly he got a call at his hotel room later on that evening that, you know, hey, don't worry about it, Commander Clifford, just go on back. This is a done deal. So he came on back to Las Vegas. Yeah, that's a hell of a story.
I love that story. No, that's the best. That's the best I've ever seen of that Clifford story. Great job getting him on. How did you get him on camera to do that even? I'm surprised he even did that.
Well, you know, it was kind of cop to cop. I was in the intelligence unit at one time, and he was in the intelligence unit at one time. And he actually, he's recently deceased. The guy rest his soul. He was a heck of a policeman. He was going to actually line me up with space out there in Las Vegas, just an empty office to do my interviews in. And we ended up just renting a big hotel suite, and my cameraman and my grip, who was my son, and I all stayed in this hotel suite. And then during the day, we filmed these interviews and just didn't had a pretty good sized front room. So it worked out. But he was immensely helpful, and I got him to come in and give me some sound bites for the film. And then that's separate. That's only on the
extras?
The extras, the special. The DVD. What do you call those extras? There's a word for that, and all of a sudden I've lost it. Not special effects, but the
outtakes.
Outtakes or DVD extras. So you have to buy the DVD to get that, but it is a heck of a story, isn't it?
Well, you pulled some cop to cop ways. I love it. It's a great story. Bob Miller talks about when he was a prosecutor. He thought, was that the Bluestein case you're talking about?
Yeah,
Gary,
yeah.
Were they shot at you? Miller was talking about how he told, I guess, was the Sheriff McDonald? I don't remember who the sheriff was. And he said he thought they kind of had a war footing against Spilatro and those guys. And he told an anecdote I saw one time on the Mob Museum site where he told I think it was McDonald, or Clifford, who it was. He said that you got to give us, because he was a prosecutor at the time in Las Vegas, Miller was, and he said you got to give us more to go on to prosecute a case other than saying you're going to arrest the guy because he's a no good SOB. We need more than that.
Yeah, I think they were kind of a wild bunch, but they were an immense help. They ended up. The Las Vegas Metro Intelligence had been corrupt at one time, and they had this Joe Blasco, who was actually now fired, and then they changed sheriffs, and the name you gave wasn't it, McCarthy, Sheriff McCarthy.
McDonald. Yeah, McCarthy.
It was McCarthy, yeah. And he took over from Ralph Lamb, and when he took over, he fired a lot of key people, and particularly in that intelligence unit. They had been kicked out of LEIU, which is a national organization of intelligence units, because there was known by a lot of other agencies that there was corruption problems in there. And Blasco actually ended up, after he got fired, worked with Tony Spilotro and Frank Culotta and the crew that, and he got popped when they broke into Bertha's, when they took them all down in the famous scenes, the mug shots and the scenes of the whole Bertha's crew standing in front of the some bars, which everybody that is a mob buff at all has seen that.
There was, I know I saw just the other day, I was watching some YouTube videos. There was like, it must be 12 or 13 part kind of documentary about the mob in Vegas there. And there was some amazing like archival television footage, including the scene where they all walk in to sit down in the, I guess, in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Which is, then you always see the still photo of them all sitting there. And I'm just thinking, you know, who was the reporter that had, that takes a lot of nerve, because these guys would just kill anybody yeah. if they felt they had just cause.
That was probably the Ned Day film, Mob on the Run.
It may have been, Eric, that motley crew, you had that guy, and I know you're Paul Scharf. I think you've talked to Paul before. You know, you had that character, that group that Aaron's talking about, and that jail shot of those, just that motley, rugged looking group of mobsters. You had, remember that guy, Larry Newman?
Larry Newman, Lurch, yeah.
That he'd gotten out of prison, I guess, up in Illinois, and had a lot of money, I guess, had a lot of juice, as they all did, all those bad guys up in Chicago, but got out of a murder conviction in Illinois and went down to Las Vegas. And then, of course, Paul's book, where he goes up on a heated rampage up to McHenry County, I guess, up there and killed Paul's dad. I mean, these guys were just, it was the Wild West, man. These guys, and it gets back to Las Vegas. You know, it's Dan Moldea, speaking of mob writers, that great mob writer Dan Moldea said, without political corruption, you can't have organized crime. So, you know, you just wonder, these guys were roaming the streets in Las Vegas. It was the Wild West, man. And that spawned those reporters, you know, back to the whole thing about the mob and the media. It spawned the guys like Ned Day, who had a shady past himself, by the way, in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. So, Larry, tell us just a little bit about, you got any particularly good story about, your own experiences with a particular story out there that sticks out in your mind?
Well, one of the things that always comes back to me is the way Miller, you know, it back in Las Vegas, so many people, as you guys know, Gary and Aaron, a lot of the early people in Las Vegas casinos came from shady backgrounds in the Midwest and from places like, you know, New York. A lot of folks who cut their teeth in Hot Springs went out to Las Vegas, but those were the ones who knew how to run casinos. So there was kind of a period there. There was a transition where those early casino operators came from shady backgrounds. Miller's dad, Ross Miller, had come from Chicago. He ran a burlesque joint up in Chicago, a bookie joint, came down to Las Vegas and teamed up with people like Carl Thomas. So that kind of stands out in my mind about the way there was a transitional period in the 80s and 90s where newer people in Nevada were really calling people out for those connections. And when Miller ran for office, his opponents would try to, even before he ran, when he was prosecutor before he ran statewide, they would call him out on his father's connections, and he had even written a letter to a judge to defend Carl Thomas, and later had to come back and say, I just couldn't turn my back on somebody who'd help my mother when my dad died. So the thing that kind of stands out in my mind, Gary, I think, is that transitional period in Nevada from, you know, that era of people who came out and were really vicious, murderous, and those who weren't murderous and vicious, but were connected, those who went to prison and those didn't. It was that kind of, you know, in and out period of you know, gangsterism that transitioned. Then their kids ran for office like Miller and became who was clean. You know, he didn't have anything on him, but they all ran for office. Not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them were elected. Miller's son later held state office. So it's just interesting to me that transitional period from that gangsterism of Nevada, from the, you know, the Meyer Lansky era, the Bugsy Siegel era, from the post-World War II era up to now, when the corporations turned, you know, sort of turned the mob out. There was that period where, you know, people weren't sure. It was, you know, who's a mobster and who's not, whose son is, who's not. It was kind of an interesting time to be in Las Vegas because it was so transitional. You had newspaper people who were, you know, sort of in the mobs. I mean, I'm sorry, in the casino industry's pocket. And it was just an interesting time. And it was nobody, you know, it was tough to tell who wore the white hats and who wore the black hats sometimes.
Really? And I'm going to explain just a little bit to folks, and I'm going to ask you about that, another about Bob Brown and the Valley Times. I'm sure you remember that story, but Carl Thomas was, for you guys that may not know who Carl Thomas was that he's referred to, Carl Thomas was Mr. Clean. He was supposedly one of the new breed of casino executives that would be working for a big company and not, you know, no connections to the mob that anybody knew about, and he had gotten pretty high, and he actually was for Alan Glick and Argent for a while when they kicked Lefty out for a while, and they elevated Carl Thomas to try to run the Stardust, and basically Lefty wouldn't let him, and Lefty was running it from home and via phone and through his other contacts that he'd put in the Stardust, and then Lefty was able to go back into the Stardust, and Carl Thomas was going to have to leave. He could not exist in the same building with Lefty Rosenthal, is what I understand. He then went to the Tropicana, and what people didn't know at the time, he had been way in the pocket of the Teamsters and the Chicago mob and then the Kansas City mob since the early days of the Circus Circus when it was first built. Jay Sarno got a Teamsters loan through the mob guys in Chicago and through and Alan Dorfman, and he even talked about on the wiretaps how one of his early skimming experiences was to make a monthly payment back to Alan Dorfman from the Circus Circus, but nobody knew it. He was a sleeper, and so then he ends up in the Stardust facilitating the skim there, and then he goes to Tropicana and facilitates the skim there. We got him on tape here in Kansas City talking to Nick Savella and Tuffy DeLuna and Joe Augusto, who was Savella's kind of guy in the Trop, telling exactly how that you skim money from Las Vegas. I'm going to play a little tidbit right here, a clip from a wiretap of Carl Thomas explaining how you skim money from Las Vegas.
That not that many guys involved, but they got to be key guys. You follow me? Now, the guy that's on the outside, the security guard, he don't know what's going on. He just knows they're back there.
Yeah.
He pieces down anywhere from 500 to 1,000. He's your guy.
Yeah.
These guys go back there, open the box, and snatch the cash. I've used that system for as long as I can get it. There is no record. They take the money, they go to the office, they count it down, boom, 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 boom. Now, the bad part about that system, if they say they're taking 2,000 a day, they could be taking 2,400.
Yeah, how do you, if they go in and pick up 7,500, how do you know they pick up 7,500?
Nick, I only know it because the guy's been with me 15 years and always know what I told him.
So that was kind of an interesting little clip there of talking about how you just walk back into the count room and count out the money, boom, boom, boom. But somehow, remind me, Larry, about his connection to Bob Miller. I know Bob Miller he caught some flack. He's a prosecutor, and when Carl Thomas starts falling, and he catches some flack. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Miller's dad was Bob Miller's dad was in a partner of Thomas's, and like you said, Gary, a lot of people in Las Vegas, you know, a lot of those early types in Las Vegas, the Mo Dalises, people like that, they just sort of were accepting the community. They gave the charities, they built hospitals, and so they weren't seen as gangsters. But then, you know, because you had an earlier group, the Johnny Rosellis and people like that in Las Vegas. But then when all these things popped on these tapes, a lot of the things that blew up in Kansas City, it surprised a lot of people back in Las Vegas. And, you know, when the fall came, a lot of people were trying to figure out who else was involved. And I know you and I have talked about this privately. You had Dorfman and Carl Thomas both caught on tape saying, "Hey, I know the prosecutor out there," sort of bragging, I guess, that we've got connections. And as Bob Miller later explained it, there was just braggadocio on those guys' parts. He didn't on their part. He didn't really know them, as he says. But so it was. Yeah, I mean, it was that was sort of the end, Jerry, of the mob-run casinos, all that stuff that popped in Kansas City, the Connecticut, the Savella, Tropicana, the Lefty Rosenthal, Stardust stuff. I love the Owsley piece you had the other day on the podcast where Owsley's talking about the guy, Crusoe, gets off the plane in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And they were looking at, as Owsley was saying, they were trying to figure out where's the money, you know, where does he hide the money? Does he have a secret compartment? Yeah, what was it, Gary? Like $40,000 or something on him, just in his pocket. So yeah, even yeah. more than that.
In one pocket, and $40,000 in the other.
Yeah,
just pulled it out like he got on the plane with a suit jacket.
Yeah.
And $80,000.
Two inside coat pockets on your suit coat. You know, you got $40,000 in one and $40,000 in the other. He had a good week in Las Vegas.
No wonder they called it sandwiches.
Well, it was exactly. I mean, so that was that era. That was that Carl Thomas and. You know, people will ask all the time, I know you guys hear this all the time too, is the mob still in Las Vegas? Not like that. I mean, when the corporations took over, you know, you had shareholders to answer to, and there was a lot more scrupulous attention paid to what happens in those count rooms. But those were just wild and woolly days when a guy could get on an airplane to Kansas City with $40,000 in one pocket and $40,000 in the other. Those who haven't heard you guys interview with Bill Owsley need to go back and listen to the FBI guy in Kansas City at the time with that great New York accent of his. Need to go back and listen to exactly how wild and woolly those days were.
Really? Now, let's. I tell you what we're going to do, I think. We still want to talk about Ned Day, and I'll play a little tidbit from Mike Green about Ned Day. But let's do two episodes here. With you, I want to hear about is a little bit about your take on Bob Brown and the Valley Times. Now, I'm going to set this up, folks. The Valley Times was a small startup paper that Ned Day actually worked for, and the guy Bob Brown that ran it, he was altruistic. He wanted to report on Las Vegas politics and the casino industry, and it'd be a competition to the Review Journal and the Sun. But it was a small startup, and he needed ad revenue. You can't run these papers, as they find out today, you can't run these newspapers without a lot of ads, and he was having a hard time generating ad income and keep his payroll up and all that. So these guys, they were out reporting on the mob and doing all that, but Bob Brown, it appears to me, and you can straighten me out on this if I'm wrong, he made a deal. Lefty Rosenthal was the ultimate corrupter. You know, one of his first conviction was for bribing of college basketball players. He was the ultimate corrupter.
Yeah.
And he convinced Bob Brown to take a, you know, like a six-figure check for advance advertising. And he was supposed to then advertise for, say, $100,000 worth of advertising over the next several months. But in fact, they did that several times, and then he would cash a check, and he was giving a bunch of the money back to Lefty. That's one way that they were skimming, was to you could write it off as advertising, and then he would Bob would keep enough to help run his paper, but he had to give a lot of it back to Lefty, and then they got involved trying to in a supposed blackmail scheme on the lieutenant or the governor elect Bob List, who had been the prosecutor or the attorney general, who was trying to get Lefty kicked out of the casino through the gaming commission, and. Lefty claims that Bob Brown, he sent him to Bob List with a story claiming that Bob List had taken a comp at the Stardust and then did a per diem, so he got a free room, but then he went back and got the money for the free room from the state, which I understand he did, and they embarrassed him on it after he became governor later on. But he was trying to get Bob List to get off of Lefty's back and leave him alone. So what do you remember? What do you remember about that story?
I do. Yeah. Brown, as you, and I know Bob List and Bob, the Republic was Bob List, as you say, Gary, and the Democrat was Bob Rose. I know them both very well. I haven't seen either in years, but I, you know, when I was in Nevada, I knew them both very well. Yeah. I mean, that was the story. Lefty, what was it? $200,000, basically laundering skim money. Through ad buys, quote, in advance, you know, whatever that means, to sort of keep the Valley Times afloat. And allegedly, Lefty says to the publisher of that scrappy paper, go up and get List off of me by telling him I know that he took per diem for, what, $3,000-some-odd in comps. Now, later, List paid that back, but it just goes to show, you know, Lefty wrote a column for the Las Vegas Sun, as you pointed out, Gary, in your book and elsewhere, that one of his nicknames was newspaper. I mean, it was incestuous. Now, one of the things about, you know, when I think about papers like the Valley Times, and I think about the paper where I worked with some of the best reporters I've ever known, the Las Vegas Sun, I mean, I look at who I worked with, Jeff Gehrman, Jeff Schumacher, Kathy Scott, all these people have gone on to be fantastic mob writers and in other fields, but the word scrappy comes up and that's what the Valley Times was. So while they had those kind of shenanigans going on, they broke some big stories. Linda Fess, who is now an ad executive in Las Vegas, as she tells it, yeah, I mean, you know, they broke a ton of stories that embarrassed the mob. And so it was kind of a weird give and take, but yeah, that was so the Valley Times ultimately petered out. They were located up in North Las Vegas, just couldn't make it. But that was sort of the story, Gary, that to stay afloat, Lefty would launder, quote, advance advertising money through the Valley Times. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable what was going on back then.
Well, but the Valley Times would run the ads, I'm sure. They had, you know, print paper they had to publish and column inches to fill. So, you know, the fact that who else was going out doing this kind of, you know, who was going after Bob List, you know, that would have any kind of information that they could dig up from a source like this? Maybe just because it was Lefty, he happened to be in a position where he knew some facts and he shared them. If he couldn't get you to run the story, what's it that he doesn't go to the next publisher to try to get them to run the story?
Yeah. Well, where you get, yeah, no, absolutely, Aaron, but where you get into obviously some real murky ethical, journalistically ethical, you know, tripwires is going to the candidate as a newspaper guy, going to the candidate for the mobbed up Chicago outfit casino guy to get the candidate to back off the casino guy. Now, how much of this is actually occurred, I don't know. I've never reported on it. So but that's where it gets super murky. You just can't go as a newspaper guy to a candidate and say, back off, because you know you need that money for advertising. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like Gary said, there was the allegation that he was kicking back a percentage of it to Lefty. Now, again, how much of this is true, I don't know, but that's the allegation that's out there. So, again, though, you had people like Ned Day at that paper just kicking some rear end, just going after the mob right and left. And so, you know, Oscar Goodman said he heard the mob lawyer, the famous mob lawyer who became mayor of Las Vegas, said he'd always heard that the Valley Times was mobbed up, that it was a mobbed up newspaper, But on the other hand, the biggest muckraker in Las Vegas history, the biggest mob fighter in Las Vegas history, journalism history, was Ned Day, who worked at the Valley Times. So, you know, where all that falls down is anybody's guess.
Well, that kind of sets us up for the next episode where we talk about Ned Day.
Yeah, let's go ahead and close this down, and we will continue this discussion next time about Ned Day, Mob on the Run. And if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube and just search for Mob on the Run. It's the doggonest mob documentary I've ever seen.
It's some great local footage there. I mean, he's point blank asking Bob List if he didn't get those rooms for free on video. And it's funny because there's, you know, Frank trying to instigate like this public conversation, and some of the other guys just make like one little comment and then they leave the room, like the other commissioners.
Oh, well, that's where he was confronting Harry Reid about, well, now, you know, you came over and had lunch with me, didn't you?
Yeah.
Didn't you? You did, didn't you?
with Hank Greenspun from the Las Vegas Sun.
Right.
And meanwhile, Rosenthal smoking a cigarette, wearing a hat. And I guess it turned out later he had to wear the hat because he had hair plugs.
He had new hair plugs. That's what Joe Augusto reported that back to Nick Savelle or Tuffy. One, I think it's to Tuffy. And he said, you should have seen him in there. He's smoking and he's chewing gum and he's wearing his hat. And Tuffy, I think Tuffy said, well, why is he wearing his hat? And he said, because he got the hair plugs.
Well, folks, he
was vain with his TV show. I still say to this day, 2017, that night, I think it was 1986, 1987, the Mob on the Run, because that, you know, Ned Day drowned in Hawaii at the age of 42 around that time. But I still say that late 80s, the Mob on the Run documentary, and as you say, Gary, it's up. I wrote about it on my Mafia Chronicles site and linked to it. But I still say that, if not the best, it's one of the best things I've seen even to date on Las Vegas and the Mob. It is really, really good.
Well, the only thing I think that's better than that, that's more current, has to be the book that Gary Jenkins wrote, Leaving Vegas. And not necessarily just the book. You've read the quotes. It's the Kindle version that you need to get, because then you can actually listen to these guys tell the story themselves from the mouth of the men that did it. But if you're not going there, you got to go to check out Larry Henry's Facebook page, which is Las Vegas Mafia History.
And then what's your what's the www.newsbreaker.com? That's
it. Brad Berkowitz, who's got Ringside Report, also has newsbreaker.com. That's where my Mafia Chronicles site is. And I agree with Aaron, by the way. Mob on the Run and Gary's book, Leaving Vegas, I'm sorry. You will find out things on those tapes, and that's where it all broke, those Kansas City, Las Vegas tapes. That'll blow your mind, no question about it.
Well, Gary Jenkins now going from being a retired police officer to kind of a journalist himself.
I was talking to a Kansas City reporter. I still maintain contacts with Kansas City, active Kansas City guys, and I was telling him a little bit about what I did, and he said, that's kind of what I do. So I go out and dig up stories and report them to people. I just do it historical perspective rather from a current day perspective. All right,
Think you got the best website going.
Thank you. I'm going to make a little public service announcement that I always do, and we're going to get out of here, and then we're going to come back with my good friend, Larry Henry, talking about the famous Ned Day. We couldn't get Ned Day on because he died of, he drowned right out in Hawaii. When did he die? When did he drown? It's like late 80s, wasn't it?
Late 80s, around 87 or so, yeah.
If you have a friend or a relative with a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I've got to say, folks, you need to go out and get the documentary that started it all. Even Larry Henry will admit it's one of the best things out there. Gangland Wire, available for purchase on Amazon, or you can go to the website ganglandwire.com, make a donation of $25 or more if you're in the United States. Gary will send you a autographed DVD that has the extras that we've talked about tonight. Then you need to get the book, Leaving Vegas, along with the Kindle version of the book so you can hear it from the mouth of the men that did it before you download the app, Kansas City Mob Tours. For $1.99, you can take your own personalized tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City. And remember to share, subscribe, and support. Put a hit out on our donate button, and we'll make you one of our made members for Gangland Wire.
All right, Larry. Good night, Larry. And we will be talking to you later about Ned Day. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Good night, guys.
Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Bumper music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Find them on Twitter at Odd-O-Matic Music. No, goodbye.
Yeah.
I like that for the bill collectors.
Yeah, really.
It's the best thing since Obamacare. Which I didn't get either. So you've got his number there.
I got it. I got it.
Let me try. Let me see your level here because I know I kind of recentered
this,
your
this
microphone.
Is going to be Larry Henry talking about his own experiences in Las Vegas, as well as telling us a little bit about the one of the more famous mob reporters, certainly on the West Coast and probably all the way back to Chicago and Kansas City, Ned Day. He was a Las Vegas newspaper reporter, and some would call him a muckraker back in the 70s and 80s. He was he had his car firebombed one time, purportedly by mob figures who were tired of his hard-hitting stories on mafia control of local casinos and street rackets.
Looks good. I mean, it seems, yeah, be up there like this, you know.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and how's it look on yours?
Looks good.
On mine,
looks good on mine. I'm hitting right to the top.
The mob breeds the media coverage. Play yours. Nick Civella and Joe on Vegas.
Yeah.
These are the sound bites. Nick monitors Vegas media in regards to Lefty. I'm just looking at my levels. I think they look good there, but I'm going to end up moving over. So when I do.
Oh, yeah, we need to recheck them because you're a little bit low. Now, when I normalize it, it all works pretty good.
How did it work?
It was good. It was
good. I thought I gained this one up a little bit.
You're a little bit low.
I don't know. They got these headphones even. I don't hear myself at all.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
You can hear me?
Yeah. You sound
back
good.
In. There we go.
You're hitting.
Now I hear it. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. And that, because I need to be almost like this if I have any question.
Right. Yeah.
So he can hear me.
Right.
I don't feel like I'm shouting. I should. Because I felt like at the end of the last, I don't know, how did that go in
it
the
was
last?
Okay.
It was
okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when I normalize it, it helps all that stuff immensely.
Water.
I got one. Thanks.
Do you want to break it into 30s?
Oh, yeah. Although, here's the deal. I've got all these other lined up. Let's see how it goes.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly all what he's got to say. I've met with him, I've talked to him, but we kind of didn't really talk much about his career.
Well, we'll start there.
Yeah, we'll start there. He's now writing for the Las Vegas Mafia History blog, and I'll ask him about that and their Facebook and that, and just a little bit about his history and all that.
4:30.
Hello, Larry.
Hello,
Larry.
Hey, Jerry. This is Larry.
Good to talk to you. It sounds good on this end. We got the recorders running. We'll not. Here's what we'll do, Larry. Is
okay.
We're going to chat just a few minutes here as Aaron kind of continues to check levels and get everything totally lined up over there at the board.
Let's have him talk. Okay.
Go ahead, Larry. You start talking a little bit. I know it's hard for you to do, but you start talking.
Just have some copy or something from the morning paper.
This is Larry Henry testing 1, 2, 3, 4. It's good to talk to you guys. Gary, I hope everything's been really going well for you. Good to hear your voice again. I'm thinking back to last spring when you and I went and had some appetizers at Carrabba's and talked about things. Good to hear your voice again.
When he rode his bike.
Yeah, when I rode the motorcycle down to Arkansas.
rode the motorcycle down to Arkansas. We had a good time. Spoke to my class. They're still talking about it. I since have moved over to another one of our campuses over in Rogers. I'm not at the Bentonville school anymore. I'm at the same school, but just at a different one that we just opened this year in Rogers.
That seems good there. I think that you're all, when Gary talks and you talk back and forth there, so I mean, he may have to lean into his mic and not the Skype connect to talk to you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll get back over to my mic.
You may be a little bit warmer, so I'm going to bring him up slightly because I got
you. You sound good, Larry. The levels are all good.
Okay.
He was a little hot, I thought, there at the beginning, but that was from our last interview. There we go.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, Larry. You know, I have learned a little more about hot springs since I was down there. I wish I'd have known this, that Oney Madden retired from the rackets in New York City and moved to hot springs and was involved in gambling and all that during the 30s to the 40s. I didn't realize that when we were talking about the connection with hot springs, and the only thing I had was the Union Station massacre and the fact that, you know, they've always had gambling there.
No, I heard your Oney Madden stuff. I loved it, man. Yeah, he met a girl that Dutch Schultz told him about.
And oh, really?
Who had a shop, on that main drag, and settled in Hot Springs. Basically, the parole board said, in New York, if you move to Arkansas, we'll leave you alone.
That's like I had a brother-in-law in about 1969 gotten some kind of vandalism charge up in our home county, and they said, well, you know, we'll probably drop this if you want to go ahead and enlist in the Army. And of course, 6 months later, he's in Vietnam.
I think that happened to a lot of people.
That did. Back in those days, that was pretty common. If you got in trouble and you were a draftable age and you hadn't been drafted, you could go to the Army and walk away from whatever, unless it was too bad.
Whatever it was, go to Vietnam. Well,
and go to Vietnam, you know, like a death sentence instead of maybe a probation.
It's a death sentence. What's really? Like sending Oney Madden to Hot Springs is like sensing a kid to a candy store. Like,
really?
Good grief. He, you know, he got to go right into what was then better than Las Vegas,
It was like turning the fox loose in the chicken house, wasn't it?
How does that make sense,
exactly.
though?
Exactly. I mean,
I know he can't
pray
me.
I mean, send him somewhere else. Don't send him to Hot Springs.
What's your question, Aaron?
Oh, my question was, you know, so somebody has committed a felony offense, and then they go, well, we're not going to do time. You're going to go enlist in the Army where they're going to train you how to use a rifle and kill people and send you into combat where you'll have experienced people shooting back at you. And hopefully that'll just shake the criminal element right out of you. And otherwise, it's some good experience.
Yeah, well, Mickey Featherstone, he's a prime example of that. He was a stone killer when he came back. And that Jimmy Coogan mafia, that was a pretty interesting little turn of events for everybody. You know, head guy Mickey Featherstone was in St. Louis for quite a while. I had several inquiries about whatever happened to him, and that's where I learned he was in St. Louis. He even gave an interview when he was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
All right. Here's what we'll do.
Do you want to have him do a liner before we get in?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and do that right now. Or no, I want to, because it's hard to find these things. Larry, I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're going to do, and then when I get done with that,
okay,
when I'm ready to go, we'll play that lead-in music, kind of puts us in the mood, and then I'll do my little opening spiel and introduce you. And what I'm going to,
okay,
I screwed up. I have some wiretap clips and interview clips with Mike Green out in Las Vegas that I got to talk about some of this stuff. And I forgot, I put the wrong thing on the thumb drive. So I'm going to say, well, you know, Nick Civella, and here's a little clip of Nick Civella and Joe Augusto and Tuffy DeLuna worrying about all the press coverage out in Las Vegas. And then we'll stop, and then we'll come back, and I'll just say a little bit more about, you know, that's because that's kind of the fact that the We don't need to really go into detail about that because it's self-explanatory. They're just reading from newspapers and worrying about, you know. But what my point I want to make there is that, yeah, they do pay attention to their press coverage is the only thing that's for.
Yeah.
And and then the Las Vegas Sun clip from Mike Green is it's just you know, he says something about how the mob guys are paying attention to their press coverage and they want to stay below I can't even think of the word now, stay below the landscape, so to speak. And then there's another one where he talks about Ned Day. So I want to talk about you and your experiences. Well, you know, first we'll talk about what your Las Vegas mob history Facebook page and your blogs and all that. And that first to give a plug for that. Do you have anything else you want to plug particularly?
No, just that Facebook page and that Mafia Chronicles on Newsbreaker. Gary.
Yeah, yeah. So let's plug that first, and then
What is that again? Though, I'm gonna write down the website name.
Okay, what's the website name? I can never remember.
It's got that funny Z in there. It's NEWZBREAKER Newsbreaker with a Z. It's Newsbreaker with a Z, not an S. NEWZBREAKER
.com.
Right. .com. Run by the guy who does that Ringside Report.
And your Facebook?
Brad Berkowitz, yeah. Yeah. The website. Yeah.
What's the Facebook?
And then that Facebook, it's just Las Vegas Mafia History.
Okay. All right. We'll plug those.
Las Vegas Mafia History. Okay.
And if you want to run that in there about Bob Berkowitz and the we ought to get that. Do you know what his website is, or his Facebook page would be okay? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, he's got that Ringside Report, which is that he's got like 28,000 members on it. Ringside Report. It's Brad Berkowitz. He's the guy who runs Ringside Report, but he also runs that Newsbreaker site that I'm on.
All right.
He's got a little web page, little empire with Ringside Report and Newsbreaker and all that. He's a retired Navy guy. I think that's what he does full time, I think.
All right. You might, if you can work him in when you're plugging your thing, why, that would be good, I think, probably.
Okay. I appreciate it, guys.
However you want to do that.
And then Larry's got a book?
No, Larry didn't have a book. No. Those are the two things we want to plug, right, Larry, is the Las Vegas Mob website, Facebook, and then the Newsbreaker blog.
The Mafia Chronicles.
The Mafia Chronicles blog on Newsbreaker, www.newsbreaker.com.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Got it. So then, you know, plug that a little bit about your history and being a newsman in Las Vegas and whatever you want to say about your your personal work history there and then let's start talking about your experiences reporting on the mob in Las Vegas, the years and all that kind of stuff. I'll just kind of give you some open-ended questions and you take off with it.
Okay.
And then we'll cut in once in a while maybe say, well, what about this? Go ahead.
Okay, how long do you think, how long are we looking at here? Oh, do you think just to ballpark it?
45 minutes to an hour, say.
Okay.
Ballpark.
That'll be a lot of fun.
And we want to, after a little bit, we want to start talking about Ned Day, I think. Because unless I want to, since he isn't around to talk to, and if I can't ever get George Knapp on the phone to go into detail on that, he's kind of the expert on it, why... If you can do that, we'll just stop right there on Ned Day. But
I'll help you with George. Yeah, a lot of interesting day, and a lot of one of the things, and we'll talk about this, Gary, is that there are a lot of reporters around. The beauty of it is a lot of reporters in Las Vegas still around who covered this, which is what makes it interesting, I think.